21 minutes past 8. Now, I'll give you the temperature. It's probably about 7 or 8 degrees. I say it for a very clear reason, Andrew, don't I?
Absolutely.
It is a Melbourne winter, though.
Well, we have in our studio a great man in the climate change debate, Anthony Watts. Now, Anthony's been a television meteorologist for a quarter of a century, I think, Anthony?
Yes, it is.
And you also run probably the world's most influential climate blog, which is What's Up With That. You have very prominent in drawing attention to the ClimateGate scandal last year, and you're touring Australia to talk about the climate change scare. One of your most interesting projects, though, has been that you and the listeners and the readers that you've managed to mobilise have gone around photographing the 1,200 weather stations in America. Now, why have you done that?
It was quite by accident, really, that this developed. It was a bit of serendipity. I originally started out a project to study paint on weather stations. A long time ago, paint on weather stations used to be made of whitewash, which is when the Weather Bureau put this, the project together in 1890. That's all they had then. Whitewash was the coating for these weather boxes, the Stevenson screens.
The same sort of screens that we have on our weather station.
Right, exactly. For a long time. But in 1979, the U.S. Weather Bureau changed the specification to latex paint, which had a different combination of chemicals in it. Calcium carbonate is what whitewash is, and titanium dioxide is the pigment in latex paint. And so I wondered, did that have a difference? I couldn't find anything in the literature on it. And so I decided to conduct an experiment, and I went out and I bought three Stevenson screen boxes and set them up differently, put in calibrated data loggers from the National Institutes of Standards, and ran an experiment to see if the paint made any difference. And lo and behold, it did. It made as much a difference as the global warming signal that we have.
So what it did was this paint elevated the signature, the temperature that these
right.
screens were measuring.
Right, and so then I decided, well, I have to go out and see if, in fact, you know, it was a government edict saying, go repaint the weather stations in 79. So I had to find out if anyone actually did it, because, you know, sometimes people ignore those things. So I went out and studied one weather station. The closest one in my town was at the University Experiment Farm, and I discovered that someone had placed a radio transmitter inside it, and they'd converted it to automatic operation. But the temperature sensor was 6 inches away from the radio transmitter, and I know you know that radio transmitters generate heat.
Well, I've seen the photographs that you've taken now of these weather stations around America. They're extraordinary. Some have had car parks put right next to them. The asphalt generates heat. Some are next to air conditioning units.
Right next to them.
Right next to them. Some are next to machinery, next to freeways, next to airports. It's really extraordinary. Now, what difference does this make to the American temperature data and then to our understanding of what's happened to world temperature?
I would point out that it's not just an American problem. We found the problem worldwide. We found problems like this in Sydney, for example. The first thing I did when I got off the plane, David Archibald, the solar scientist, is showing me around, and he asked me when I got off the plane, what would you like to do? Would you like to have lunch, go have a beer, go see the sights? I said, I want to see the weather station. So we went over to the observatory there, and it's got a nice brick wall next to it. And what's really going on here is that urbanization.
You're talking about on Observatory Hill there in Sydney, on Sydney Harbour.
Right, right, the old observatory yeah. there. And the station there is right next to a brick wall that gets
wall
full sun during the day. Yeah. The problem that we found again and again and again...
But that's always been there, though.
Pardon?
That measurement station's always been in that spot.
Right.
That wall has been there forever.
Right, but the point is that it elevates the temperature. Now, when you move a station, and that station did get moved in 1917... When it got moved there, it made a step. And so the past was cooler, and then all in the future is warmer. So that increases the trend unless it's accounted for. And we found this kind of a problem again and again where either the city builds up around it and you get more of these heat sinks that bring the overnight temperature up, or they get moved and placed in areas that have these heat sinks around them.
And so what has that done to the American data, do you think? It's exaggerated the warming trend that we're told has happened over the last century by what would you estimate?
I'm estimating right now that we've got about a half a degree centigrade of bias just due to UHI influences in it. Now, I'm working on a peer-reviewed paper with Dr. Roger Pielke of the University of Colorado, and we'll be publishing that soon. And we have the results of 1,067 out of those 1,200 stations that we've surveyed. And we've got what's called the metadata as well as the temperature data, and we'll be showing that, yes, we can see a bias there.
So you're saying that over the last century, we're told the globe has warmed, what, about 0.7 of a degree. Two-thirds of that might just be from problems, this urban heat island effect you're talking about.
It could be. And then there's
not a real warming, just a urbanization.
Yeah, urbanization. Now, of course, there's also natural cycles involved and other factors, but we believe that urbanization and land use change has a big factor on the global temperature signal.
Sorry, Andrew, when you talk about that theory back home on air and in papers and in books and when you write about it, What do your critics come back at you with? What do they say?
Well, interesting thing about the critics is it had them in a panic when I was showing these photographs because they were so bad. In fact, I discovered afterwards that the Weather Service was going around behind us and closing some of the stations that we were highlighting because they were so bad. But it caused the National Climatic Data Center to go into a panic when I published a booklet showing some of these stations, and they took a data set that I published at 43% of the network surveyed and began to use it for their own peer-reviewed paper. And I called them up and I said, don't use this, you're not going to find a signal, and here's why, because we had a low-hanging fruit problem. People were going from the cities, and they're going out to the radius around the cities and getting the weather stations, but we were missing the great American plains and places like that, and so we didn't have a complete picture. And I said, you're not going to find a reasonable signal at 43%, but they went ahead and published a peer-reviewed paper anyway, comparing it at that low level. And, of course, they got what they wanted. They were able to say, well, there's no difference and Mr. Watts is wrong, but our data is different.
The complete record, you think, will change it. The one question I have, though, there's also satellite measurements.
Yes.
Of temperature, and they show a warming, too. What do we conclude from that?
Well, certainly I'm not denying that there's a warming. Some of it is due to, I believe, UHI. There is also natural cycles involved, the Pacific Decadal Oscillation. For example, you can see it very clearly in the Perth temperature record. About 1978, there was a big shift. There was a step, just like as if you'd moved the weather station, and that was because of a change in the Pacific Ocean. And so if you calculate the trend across that step, of course it goes positive. But that step is just a different state of the ocean, and it's a different cycle. And that doesn't necessarily mean that it was a cause of CO2.
So does man-made activity create a warmer globe?
Say again, please?
Does man-made activity cause the planet to warm?
I agree that it does. Our land use change is the biggest factor. I mean, think about what this used to be 100 years ago. Yep. A lot of this area was probably just bush. And so all of that's been changed. And so, yes, where we're measuring temperature, we changed the environment. And
the local environment, not
right,
the global.
And it's a global problem. And we're now migrating to stations, weather stations, to airports, more so than in the rural areas. And so I think that that has a signal and a factor.
Andrew, you might tell people where they can go and see Anthony while he's here in Australia. I think he's giving a lecture here.
Well, that was yesterday, so off this morning, aren't you?
To Hobart today.
To Hobart. You've done most of Australia. What sort of reception you're getting? Do you think skepticism is on the rise? Do you think it'll never take off? Do you think the global warming scare is here to stay?
Well, it's kind of laid off just a little bit, thanks to the fact that ETS here has been put on the shelf
for
a while. The
emissions trading scheme, yeah.
I'm sure it'll be back at some point. And so we need vigilance to look at that. But I think skepticism on the globe as a whole is on the rise because of several things. There's the climate gate issue, and then there's also...
Those were the leaked emails that showed a collusion among scientists, leading climate scientists around the world, bullying, hiding of data, that kind of stuff.
Right, and just today there's a new revelation. There's been a blacklist published. I don't know if you've seen it on my blog or not, but a researcher in Toronto made a blacklist, essentially, of all climate scientists who are skeptical, and then used that to write a peer-reviewed paper that ended up in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. It's just mind-boggling that this would happen.
Well, I think skepticism is extremely healthy. Great to have you. Thank you for coming into the studio. I appreciate it very much.
And if listeners want to check up on his blog, it's What's Up With That. Watts as in WAWTS.
Thank you, Andrew. 8:30, back after this.